Does the word hysterical rub you the wrong way? How about the word spinster or effeminate? There are a lot of loaded words associated with women. There always have been, according to the new book, Mother Tongue, The Surprising History of Women's Words by Jenny Nuttall. Jenny is a professor of medieval English literature and language at Exeter College at the University of Oxford. In her new book, she takes us on an enlightening linguistic journey through 1,000 years of language and what we can learn from the vivid vocabulary that English has had for women's bodies, experiences, and sexuality. Here she is to share 5 of her big ideas.
Hello, my name is Dr. Jenny Nuttall, and I've been teaching medieval English literature and language at the University of Oxford for the last 20 years. I've thus had a fair amount of practice at making old words seem interesting. Today, I'm going to share with you 5 of the key insights from my new book called Mother Tongue, The Surprising History of Women's Words. Insight number 1 is that the past wasn't silent about women's lives and experiences. As you might expect, there's plenty of sexism and misogyny in the language of the past. But there are also evocative records of women and their lives. In my new book, I've investigated the vocabulary for women's bodies, lives, and experiences in the first 1,000 years of the English language, as English develops from an immigrant language brought to the British Isles in the 5th and 6th centuries to a language exported around the world by colonization and exploration. I found 12th century descriptions of what it's like to live with the fear of an abusive partner and of the hard work of caring for a small baby, and medieval lyrics describing the fear felt by a young woman who is being pestered by a persistent stranger, what we would call street harassment today. 18th century poems describe the challenges of working women who are juggling childcare and wage earning. Words like these can resonate powerfully with us today. Insight number 2 is that newer isn't necessarily better when it comes to words. Many of our current words for female sexual and reproductive body parts and processes, for example, are either formal or euphemistic. You might think of words like menstruation or names like uterus or vulva. Some of them come into English from Greek and Latin and are the products of scientific discovery and medical terminology. We might feel uncomfortable using words like this, not only because these body parts and their names are often taboo, that is, they are considered things which should be avoided or danced around in public discourse, but also because the words themselves can feel difficult and confusing. Surveys suggest that many of us can't accurately match all of the technical terms with the right body parts on a diagram. But before these words became the usual names, English had some other alternatives. Being on your period was called being on your flowers, because it was understood that just as flowers precede fruits, regular menstruation was helpful for fertility. And before we used abstract Latinate words for female sexual anatomy, there were vernacular alternatives like the mother, meaning the womb, womb gate or wicket for the vulva. A wicket is an old name for a small gate. Lips, wings, or nymphs for what we now call the labia. One Renaissance physician, Thomas Reynold, wrote a book in the mid-16th century telling women what to expect during pregnancy and labour. He calls the vulva the passage port, the vagina the womb passage, and the cervix the womb port. A port is a gateway, like those stone archways that give you entrance to a walled city. We can't turn the clock back and parachute these older words into our contemporary English. But these alternative names might inspire us to speak as eloquently as we can about female anatomy. Insight number 3 is that the backstories of our words matter. You don't need to know a word's etymology, its origins, and its changes over time to use it as part of today's English. But finding out about a word's backstory reveals some of the assumptions and biases which we've inherited from the past. Take the words which we use to say that someone is growing another human being inside them. We have words and phrases like being or falling pregnant, expecting a baby, or carrying a child. They all sound rather passive, as if the mother-to-be isn't doing much more than transporting her fetus around, or simply waiting patiently for a baby to be delivered. Gestation, a more formal term, sounds a bit more impressive, but that term too comes from a Latin verb which simply means to carry. These words minimize pregnancy, seeing the female body as a mostly passive carrier rather than an active creator. But other words, which English once had but which are now lost, give us a different way of thinking about pregnancy. In medieval English, a woman could be childing, making and birthing a child, or grating, that is literally growing greater or bigger. I also like the very rare medieval word barnishing, from barn, like Scottish bairn, meaning a child. So literally childishing, child-making. These older verbs get closer to a more active meaning, one which 20th century feminists reclaimed with concepts like reproductive labour, the work done predominantly by women, which creates and nurtures new generations of humans. Insight number four is that old words can remind us of hidden histories. The English of the past records a history of women earning money for themselves and their households. In medieval London, there were throwsters who twisted silk filaments into thread and yarn, and silk women who made ribbons, laces, hairnets, and other kinds of trims with this silk thread. This was big business rather than a mere cottage industry. In the 15th century, the silk women told Parliament that they had trained over 1,000 girls as apprentices. But most women in the past were generally excluded from higher paying trades and professions. They worked at the margins of the economy, usually for lower pay than men doing equivalent work. And some women's work was physically very strenuous, like the maids in the crane who turned a treadmill, which powered a crane lifting stone blocks in Cheshire in the 1560s. Older words can also tell a kind of truth about women's work in the past. A drudge was a word for a female servant in the Renaissance, one expected to do menial jobs in a household. That gives us our modern word drudgery, the often boring work needed to keep everyday life going. And the origins of the term spinster, meaning a single woman, are also revealing. A spinster was originally a woman who spun wool with a spindle or a wheel, this being the sort of low-paid work often, but not exclusively, done by unmarried women. That particular association led to a spinster becoming a word for a woman who had not yet married. Insight number five is that history is never simple and that it's always surprising. Things which we take for granted turn out to have been the result of changing fashions and customs. Many women dislike having to choose between Mrs. or Miss as their title, based on their marital status. The modern title Ms. tries to solve this problem. But that choice between Miss or Mrs. only took this form in the 1740s, when unmarried adult women, following a French fashion, began to be called Miss. Before that point in time, any woman of sufficient social status was called Mrs., whether she was married or unmarried, while Miss was kept as a polite term of address for female children. The new fashion for adult Miss allowed marriageable daughters in wealthier families to be distinguished from servants and tradeswomen who, if they had a certain degree of seniority, were called Mrs. whether they were married or not. Or take a familiar feeling word like girl. When it arrives in English around the year 1300, it refers to both male and female children. It starts to be used for female children only, in opposition to the word boy, at the start of the 16th century. And then, for the next 150 years or so, this new concept, girl, is often used very pointedly to refer to female children and young women who are being in some way rebellious or unconventional according to the customs of the time, those who are stepping outside of categories such as maid or daughter. Girls are already rebel girls in the 16th century. So even the most everyday words have surprising past lives. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Jenny. That was Jenny Nuttall with 5 big ideas from Mother Tongue, The Surprising History of Women's Words. You might also like our book bite for A Brief History of the Female Body, an evolutionary look at how and why the female form came to be by Dina Amera. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.